And so what I did is I kind of went where everybody else didn't go. And instead of trying to be the best like sales guru, which I granted, I'm not discounting my product because I think it's the best.
Yeah.
However, instead of trying to get like 1% better with that, I was just like, well, none of these guys know how to buy media. They don't know how to operate a true company at 8 figures. And they also don't know how to market. And I was like, man, if I can be the only guy who can really, number one, be able to buy ads profitably and be a great copywriter and marketer, and number two, operate a company properly, if I can do those two things, I'll be the winner in this industry.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Build Your Network podcast, the only top-rated show committed to helping you grow your business, foster real relationships, increase your authority, and build the network of your dreams. Let's get into the show.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Build Your Network. Today, I'm sitting down with the man, the myth, the legend, Cole Gordon. Cole started out by being one of the top closers in the high ticket industry, having sold over $10 million in online coaching, consulting, and agency deals within just a few years in his career. Then he scaled his own consulting company to now 8 figures in less than 1.5 years. And now he builds, trains, and consults the top sales teams of hundreds of 7-8-figure companies online through his company, closers.io, having worked with awesome teams with Tony Robbins, Frank Kern, Dean Graziosi, basically everybody that you've heard of that sells stuff online. Cole has helped with their sales team, including yours truly, actually, by the way. So this is going to be a super cool conversation and get into a lot of different sales tactics and strategies and everything like that. So Cole, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Happy to be here, man. Let me know I can provide some value.
Of course. So before we do that, before we get into the value pieces, I like to take it back because I'm always curious how people ended up doing the thing that they're doing, especially in this crazy world of online marketing and sales, because you know there's typically not like a section of the card you fill out for your career counselor in high school that says like info product marketer or high ticket salesperson. So let's start there, dude. 12-year-old, 13-year-old Cole Gordon, set the scene for us. What was life like for you?
12, 13 years old. That far back?
That far back.
Wow, that's far. So yeah, I mean, when I was 14, I was a freshman in high school and I got my ass beat so bad in front of my entire community during a wrestling match. So like, you know, during a duel, when you duel another high school, like it's worse than a tournament because only one person goes at one time. So not only is like, you got to have some balls to do wrestling because it's mano a mano, man to man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or sometimes man to woman. Like there's women who wrestle the men and beat them, which is pretty crazy. So anyways, it's mano a mano, but on a duel, you're the only ones going on at one time. So it's even worse. And your entire, you know, both sides, the entire communities are there. People come out, your friends come out, your family is out there. And I was a freshman. And the thing that sucks about wrestling in high school as a freshman is like, you know, if you're a freshman and you're a senior, there's a real difference in physicality. Like there's a thing called puberty going on, right? And so like I was this freshman and I just got my ass whipped 2 times. Like you always go twice. So a lot of times it's a tri meet. So they get 3 teams together and then they'll wrestle each other. So I went twice. I got my ass beat really bad both times. And I mean, it was like tremendously bad. And I don't know what it was. Like I had my ass beat before, just as anybody who's wrestled probably had their ass beat. But there was something about that time where it really, like, I don't know if it was my dad, you know, didn't talk to me that night or something happened where I was very triggered. And I remember looking in the mirror and saying like, this is never going to happen again. Like I'm going to do whatever it takes to prevent something like this from ever happening again. Cause I was in like a dark place. Even though it really didn't matter, you know, it's just one of those things. You're so young, like you're in front of all your friends, you're 14. And that night I went into the basement and I started lifting weights. And, you know, like after the meet, like I'm like going to get my gains in or something. But like, I was just so driven. And so like, I was like, I'm going to go downstairs and start lifting weights. And to be honest, what happened was that the gap between my freshman and my sophomore year, I gained 40 pounds. And I put on a lot of muscle, no steroids, nothing. Really just good old food and, you know, lifting weights, man. Like I put on 40 pounds, went from 160 to 205. And, you know, I was like, for those who lift out there, I was bench pressing like 185 when I started to I almost cleared 300. I was squatting like in the fours. So, I mean, and I was a, you know, again, so now I'm 15, right?
Yeah, sophomore
like,
in high school.
Yeah. I'm a pretty young guy, pretty freaking built, strong, 205. Yeah. I weighed more than I weigh now. And it totally transformed like my sports. I mean, as you can imagine, like I went from being not that great to like varsity football as a sophomore. I went from not really being that great at wrestling to like pretty good at wrestling. But the next year I went like 30 and 10 or 35 and 15 or something. It was not bad. Right. And so the reason I tell that story is that that was the first part of my life where I realized I can be set in a circumstance and get better at something, which I know is like kind of like duh, right? Like we know that it sounds like, you know, super obvious, but I don't know, man. Like when I was younger, like I think most people out there in the world, like they don't even actually believe they have agency to do right. stuff. I think instead of feeling like they can influence their circumstances, they feel like they're a victim of their circumstances.
Totally.
So fast forward to my freshman year of college. And, you know, it's funny because I was really good at sports. I was popular. When you're in high school, you're popular if you're good at sports most of the time.
Sure.
So I was like, cool, because I was good at sports, but I had bad social skills. I was really, really bad socially. And so my freshman year of college, you know, I went from being the most popular kid in school because I was like the captain of the football team to being like wildly unpopular and like, you know, not attractive, wasn't getting the girls, like wasn't even like, I just like went from being really cool to like, shit, like I can only make friends with like the nerds.
Yeah, you know, bottom like, of the totem pole again.
Bottom of the totem pole. It wasn't even bottom of the totem pole. It was like, I realized how bad I was at like social skills. And I was like, man, I'm awkward. I'm weird. And again, I went to that dark place, the same dark place I went when I, you know, got down in the weight room and I was like, well, this is never going to happen again. I did this. It was the same exact thing, which is really funny. It was the same exact moments. And I ended up transferring schools from a really small community college to a big party school. And I vowed that I was going to, I was playing college football. I quit college football. I vowed I was going to become like fucking popular and like, you know, this like ladies man or something. And what I did is I started reading books. And, you know, the first couple of books I read on like social skills or how to get girls or whatever, they're weird. Like they were real pickup-y and nothing wrong with that stuff. I think there's a good place for it. But like, you know, you take a really awkward guy and then you try to make him do like cocky, funny David D'Angelo stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just got a more awkward guy, right? So I stumbled upon this book that was an ebook. It was like one of the books people were selling through AdWords for $47.
Yeah.
And so I bought this book and I remember sitting in the most boring history class of all time. And I read this book cover to cover because the history class was 2 hours. I just powered through it. And I walked out of that class a different person. And all the things taught in that book were very simple. But like, again, I kind of just had never really worked on any of this stuff. So, you know, I realized, oh, like I need to, like when I'm in an interaction, I need to like bring a higher state of frequency and a higher state of energy. I need to be looking at how can I provide value to that. I mean, super basic stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of gave me some good stories of like what like a popular person or somebody who was great with like their social skills was like. And I mean, I remember walking back into that dorm and having interactions with girls and guys and whoever who were in that dorm and them literally saying, this is after a 2-hour history class. I just read this entire book in one sitting. Them saying, what happened to you? Mm-hmm. Like, it was one of those things when I walked away, they were like, what the fuck happened to that guy? Because I mean, I went from like weird as fuck to like cool in two hours. And I think it's a good thing to show that like, sometimes you do have to build skills. Other times you just have to unlock things that are already existing within yourself. Like I was not like, I didn't have the skills. I was just stifled. I was in my head. I was energetically blocked. And so whatever happened, that boring ass 2 hours of history class where I read that book, it totally shifted everything for me. And then over the next year, I mean, I changed as a person. Like my friends would come and visit me from back in high school and they'd be like, dude, what happened to you? You're totally different. I went from being like, never being able to get a girl, like, you know, I could barely like get a kiss to like, you know, I was at least doing good. You know, I wasn't like the most like the, you know, I wasn't, you know, freaking Zac Efron or whoever that guy is. I wasn't like that, but I was good, you know? Yeah. And so then what happened was that was the second time where I really built, like, I was like, wow, I recognized something I wanted to get better at or improve about myself or a circumstance I wanted to change. And instead of being a victim of the circumstance, I was able to influence the thing.
100%.
And so that was the second time it happened, right? And I realized, oh shit, that happened like when I was 14 too. And essentially the second time I was like, well, dude, that's when it clicked. I was like, well, shit, I could get better at school. I could get better at like anything. So I started reading all sorts of books because I was like, this books thing, there's a lot of stuff in these books. Yeah. And I was like, man, I can like really get. So what happened I started reading books and the next thing I wanted to do was get good at school. So I didn't read a book, but I found this site. I wish I could still find it today. It was this site for free website that had a little course on it. And it taught you how to study and get good grades in college. And I went through that course and I went through Stephen Covey's 7 Highly Effective Habits of whatever people. And I went from being like a 2.8 student, never didn't get a 4.0 the rest of my college career. And that was also like, then that happened. I was like, fuck, I could do like anything I really put my mind to. Yeah. And so then I was reading another book and it was during, I used to bartend because that's what you were, you know, if you were trying to be popular at my school, you were a bartender. So I was a bartender, I was bartending, but it was during break. So all the kids went back home. And so it was winter break. I'm literally sitting in the bar with like a freaking hobo and me, you know, it's like, and that was the only customer I had the entire shift. So I'm there for 8 hours because it's like 8 p.m. to 3 p.m. and 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. And I'm just like, I have nobody to serve because everybody's gone. They went home. It's winter break. And so I'm reading this book. And this book by Felix Dennis, you know, it's not really that great of a book. It's an interesting read. But essentially, like, it was my first sort of introduction to, like, if you want to make money, like, you don't do it through being a doctor or, like, being a lawyer. You do it through, like, having a business or being a salesperson, which is, you know, hence I eventually got into sales. But that, because I was, you know, this 4.0 student, going to go to medical school, going to do all that stuff, you know, very status driven, very money driven. I realized like, oh shit, like I'm okay. Yeah. I do want to make money because I'm like a flawed human being. And not that you're a flawed human being if you want to make money, but like I was very darkly driven by it. Right. I still was like very status driven. I don't know if it was the wrestling thing I explained to the girls. I don't know what it was, but like I still had a lot to prove. And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to go do business. That's how you make a bunch of money, not making 200K a year as a doctor.
Yeah.
Like, duh, right? But like, I thought I was in the track, right? Go to school, go to college, go to medical school, go into your rotation. I was going to be like a osteopathic doctor. I don't even know what it was. I didn't know what I was going to do. So anyways, I walked out of that shift. I'm going to do a business. And at the time, I was following this guy named John Romanello and also Mike Matthews, because they were teaching like some fitness stuff. There was evidence, but they were bloggers. And I was like, dude, I'm going to blog. You know, that didn't work out. So like, I could not blog for the life of me. But what happened was I was trying to blog. I was trying to get traffic and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I procrastinated so hard. I only published two blogs the entire time because I was like, you know, perfectionist, procrastination, all this stuff. That was a year of my first business, just two blog posts. Accomplished nothing. And then I saw an ad by Sam Evans and I was like, oh, okay, this guy's like 25 and he's a freaking baller. Let me get on this webinar. You know, I'm like the guy who's attending the webinars. And so I'm like, okay, attend the webinar, totally like sold into this thing. Like totally sold and had buyer's remorse too, tried to refund. They wouldn't let me refund. So I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to go through this. And that was like the best decision I ever made because that course he had, Consulting Accelerator, if you don't know what it is, I don't think people realize how many people came into this industry through that, especially the high ticket industry. But that's like, this was, you know, 2015. That's what like really, I was like, oh, okay. You know, like consulting, high ticket. And I started to learn like real skills and I learned kind of how the industry works and I learned Facebook ads. So I was like, I'm going to go run Facebook ads for other people. And so I did that, failed for a year, joined another high ticket program. And once I had like, when I went from the course environment to the high ticket environment, a group coaching environment where I actually got some support, I got out of my procrastination and I like just took massive action, you know, tunnel vision, followed the plan. And I followed this lady's plan. Her name was Kat. And I did like 57K in an 8-week program. And I was a total underdog. I had no idea how to run. I mean, even though I was running ads, I had no idea what I was doing, how to run ads. I literally had no business taking on clients. I couldn't get anybody results, but I was selling people, you know? And look, like, you know, back then, is that the most ethical way to start? No, but like, dude, I was so lost. So I take on all these clients and I was trying to outsource it to contractors. I was spending money on ads. My closing rate was shit, you know? So I was just breaking even, but I thought I was making money. So I quit my job. And within 3 months, I was completely out of money. And so as soon as my bank went less than 1,000, I was like, I made a deal with myself that I was going to go back and get a job. And I knew that there's these guys selling her program who got me in, who are making $20,000 a month in sales. And I was like, well, shit, I'm going to go do that. If I was like, if this doesn't work, I'm going to go do that. Cause like that seems like the easy button to get to $20,000 a month. Yeah. So I went under 1,000 and then I went to go sell for them. And I always say like, you know, sales is like the military of business. So like, I kind of failed and then I was like, well, I'm getting into sales, you know, it's like, I'm going to the military. Right. Right? So I was like, cause you always know you can make some money in sales. So it's kind of like, it's like the same thing as where, you know, like worst case, you could always go in the military and have a decent job. Kind of the same thing with sales. It's the military of business. So I get in there.
It's the great equalizer, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get in there and, you know, immediately I thought it was going to be really good. I was like the worst person on the team. It's terrible. Worst salesperson in existence, to be honest. And, you know, I worked really hard at it. And what's funny is to come full circle, like I think my sales job really helped me develop a lot of the social skills that I didn't have earlier. And I was able to really, over the course of a year, go from the worst person to the best person, and then eventually go into a different company and a different company and, you know, have a lot of success. So that's kind of the story for the most part, man.
Yeah. I mean, so much to unpack there, dude, even starting back from the story of wrestling at 14, there's a book that comes to mind called Mindset by Carol Dweck. And she really like breaks down those two different paths that you're talking about. Like, you either get to the point, like she talks about a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. You either believe that you just have the abilities that you were born with and there's not much you can do to improve on them, or you believe that you have abilities you were born with and it's your ability to improve those abilities in accordance to how much time you spend on those abilities. And you clearly were bought into the growth mindset early on when probably, I mean, I would say the majority of the population is stuck in the fixed mindset where they just kind of, their default is, well, I'm just not good at that. Like, I just can't do sales, or like, I just like, I'm not built for sports, or like you could have easily, when you were that 14-year-old kid, just been like, I'm just a skinny kid. That's just who I am. So, you know, I may as well just play chess or something. Like I shouldn't do this wrestling thing anymore. Why do you think that, like, is that something that you think was like born, like you were born with? Do you think that you developed that? Was there something that happened earlier on? Or can you pinpoint why you chose to go that path rather than the I give up path?
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, I think here it is. The thing is if you look at a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of them either started off with something with their health or relationships.
Some origin story.
Yeah. Well, health and relationships is a very key starting point for a lot of people. And I think the reason why is that, like, I don't think even somebody with a true fixed mindset, I don't think they would refute that, like, if they work out, they won't put on muscle. You know, like, I feel like that's a pretty easy gap to cross in terms of belief. You know, like, what your potential might be could be different, but like, I feel like even somebody who has a pretty victim mindset would agree, like, oh, if I get in the gym and I lift a bunch of weights, I'll probably get stronger, you know? So I, out of a place of pain of just getting my ass kicked, I think that was an easy thing to cling on to, of like a way I could channel the pain into something that would improve myself. And then once that was once that kind of worked out for me, then like the next thing was social skills, which like I kind of, it's interesting, like with lifting and health, there was really no shame I had in trying to work on it. But when I had to work on my social skills, it was like I was admitting that I was like a fucking weirdo by working on it, which is like so weird. Like now I would work on, I'm like pretty advanced now and I'd still work on it, you know? It's like, why not? But I don't know. It was like, I remember having all of this guilt and shame towards buying this book on dating. It's like, you know, like, and I wish I would have like not had that. And I just would have like bought more books and read more books. Cause I remember buying one book and being like, all right, well, I'm going to read this one book and I'm going to figure it out, or like never read a book. I mean, it was so weird. Like I was like, I'm going to make sure I do this book, but I'm not doing anything other than this. Like I had this shame towards it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, dude, I think the other thing is when social skills, I think it's an easy thing to cling on to that. Okay. Maybe you can get better at that. And then once I got better at both of those, I was like, oh, you can get better at like anything.
Yeah. Once you see it happen, once you see evidence that it actually can happen that way, it's like, oh, well.
That's why a lot of people who are entrepreneurial. Like a lot of guys start with dating because their dating life sucks so bad. A lot of guys also start with fitness. A lot of women start with fitness. That's how they eventually get into entrepreneurship. Yeah. A lot of women or men also maybe have like a really bad medical condition, and you find out about their story about how they heal themselves, and then they go on to help other people do the same thing. And that's what really like gets them in the business, you know? So I think a lot of that comes from this place of like this self-discovery of agency. And when I say agency, like this growth mindset and ability to change your abilities and control things. And, you know, thank God I discovered that, because what's funny is, you know, as much as I love my parents, like I'm not saying how they live life is wrong or anything, but they kind of don't have that as much. Like, and really nobody in my family ever did either. Like, I don't know anybody, I don't have any relative that I can look to and say like, oh, they're the same way, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And I think I just kind of stumbled upon it. And, you know, I think more people nowadays are stumbling upon it because of the internet, which is a really great byproduct of it, you know?
Yeah, speed of information makes a massive difference, I think, between our parents' generation and our generation.
Yeah, and accessibility of it as well.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the transition then from salesperson back into, you know, 100% commission sales is entrepreneurial. But it's not entrepreneurship, because you don't have to worry about finance. You don't have to worry about accounting and marketing and all the other aspects of running a business. But when you made that transition, because you're making like 30, 40,000 a month as a high ticket closer, something in there. Yeah. I mean, most people at that are just like, well, I've made it. This is awesome. I'm done. Like, I'll do this for a long time.
Yeah.
What made you just go like, I got to do something on my own again?
Well, dude, what happened was, to be honest, I didn't really plan on leaving. And I kind of, you know, I'm kind of a workaholic in the best way possible. So I was working really fucking hard, and I kind of, my predisposition to overworking along with the culture of the company I was in, which was a very hardworking culture. That culture ran very hot. We have really high pressure to meet some expectations, which I'm not against. I just think that on top of how hard I worked myself and how much pressure I put on myself. So I worked myself into a pretty bad place of burnout. And I don't even say that from like a mental perspective. It was more like physical, looking back. Like I had like chest pain, and, you know, I had all these like signs of way too much cortisol in my system. And yeah. I think what happened was I just kind of worked myself into a breakdown. And that breakdown, I had like a falling out with the person owning the company, which we've made up since and are good friends now. But, you know, that, so I kind of, all of a sudden was like, went from making all that money to like making nothing.
Yeah.
And I did not plan on it, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And for a little bit, I thought I was going to partner with somebody else and build out their sales team. Cause one thing I did know is I was like, I'm really, really great at sales. And I knew I was also I knew I could build a sales team better than anybody at that point. So I was like, man, should I partner with somebody? And then I went to this mastermind. I was in San Diego. And we were still sitting around, and people were sharing what they need help with and whatever. And I started giving some advice on sales. And I remember like everybody in that room was like, dude, you need to like start your own thing. Cause like, you're really, really good at this. Like, you're really, really, really good. And I was like, and like, there's a few people that were like, very like, you really need to do this.
Yeah. Like, I'll pay
like, seriously.
Like, I'll be customer number one.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay. And then, so yeah, I mean, I just did some organic and launched. And you know, for the first year-ish, probably like 6, 7, 8 months, you know, I was doing well, but it was all organic, which is a totally different game than getting paid media dialed in. Because when you're organic, you're really like, you know, unless you're like a Brooke Castillo or you're like Graham Stephen or something, to where you just have a massive amount of media, right? That changes the game. That I don't even call, like, when I say organic, I don't almost... That's like not organic to me. That's like, you have a huge media platform. Like, that's different. But like for me, you know, I had like a couple thousand Facebook friends, right? So I was kind of getting customers through that and doing okay. But the big leap is going from that to really having a business. And a business is really at the end of the day, a system. So like it's having a true system opposed to like having a, like me posting on social media, me taking the sales calls, me delivering, which was great. Like that was actually a fun time looking back. But I will say like now it's much more fun, and I feel better about it because it really is actually like a system. Like we have outbound sales, we have paid media, like we have affiliate, like it's just, and it all is like a operating system, you know? So that's a great shift for any business owner to make. And I think most people think they have systems, but they don't. But you should always really not think about the revenues, but think about the system you're building, because the best system will lead to the best revenues. So it's like, if you optimize the system, you get the best result, profit and top line wise, as a byproduct of that, if that makes sense.
Would you at this point more identify as a marketer, or would you still identify as a closer salesperson?
I mean, I mostly identify as the sales team guy. I think that's kind of like my thing now. Yeah. You know, I used to be the sales guru, but there's a lot of sales gurus. And, you know, I do feel like when it comes to high ticket, coaching, consulting, agency services, that type of stuff, especially mid-market to B2C, I feel like my sales training is the best. Obviously, if you ask anybody else who does sales training, they'll say their sales training is the best. But I strongly do feel like mine is, and I've been through everybody's because I want to study everybody. Like, I genuinely want to learn still today. I'm a student. Now, is my sales training the best when it comes to like corporate or something like that? I mean, it's still pretty freaking good, but I think there's a few guys that are better than me when it goes to much, much bigger B2B and corporate. It's kind of a different style. Sure. But I think our sales training is great. However, there's a lot more people trying to do that. And I don't know, man. I kind of feel like I've grown past it a little bit. Yeah. I really like to be known as kind of the sales team guy. Yeah. And that's the category we truly own, which I can say, like, you know, even let's say my sales training is the best. I think like the next best person would be like right here. Like, yeah. I think like they're right there, you know? Sure. But with sales team, I can tell you for sure, the next best person is like, if we're here, next person's like here. Like, we're way better. So I feel like for me, what I'm if like, I might as well take that category because I feel like that's where I'm providing the most value to the market anyways. Yeah. And it's definitely a word that we own. Now, I will say, I tend to enjoy it. Like, I have sales managers now. I don't really manage much of the sales team of myself anymore. And so I do kind of enjoy the business building aspect of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I don't, that's a harder category to take. You know, the category king of that one right now is Mr. Hormozy. You know, he's crushing it with that. So it's like, you know, I kind of like my sales team category, and that's a big TAM, right? Like, we could take that as far as we could want to take it. So, yeah. And I still really like it, and it's a, you know, fun thing.
Yeah. The reason for the question is like kind of what you were saying earlier is, I mean, you can be a really good salesperson and run a $100,000 a month business, but it's not until you can predictably scale marketing channels,
right? Yeah,
cold traffic, where you are overwhelmed with leads and have to continue to scale up to deliver, fulfill, and to continue to sell all the people you have coming in. I think one of the things that you've done extremely well is the marketing aspect, and specifically just VSL writing, copywriting, and a couple of things like that. That maybe like you're not known for, you don't like market as like, you don't market yourself as the guy that does this.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, I'm in your program, bro, you know, and like I've done a ton of sales. I did 5 years of door to door, sold a bunch of different stuff, gone through a ton of different sales trainings. But like the couple of things that I've learned from your program, probably the most has been like how to script a good VSL. Yeah. And that right now is bringing us like $90 applications.
Wow.
Cold traffic. The VSL that we wrote up on like some of the scripts and stuff and templates that you had on there.
Well, you did a great job, by the way. Like, I will say when I saw yours, I was like, well, his is really good. Like, you nailed it, which a lot of people, they have to build the skill, but you're good with media and you understand video. And so probably done a little bit of copywriting yourself. You have the sales background. So you kind of had the skills. We just needed to put them in the right vehicle. A lot of people got to build the skill of copywriting or being on video or all of this stuff, which makes it harder. But yeah, certainly, man. You know, here's what I'll say about that is that when I got into the sales guru space, I was like, okay, well, all these sales gurus are just like so obsessed with sales guru-ness, NLP and language and all this sales process. And I was like, dude, my stuff's already like really, 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 really good in terms of sales training. Yeah. And so what I did is I kind of went where everybody else didn't go. And instead of trying to be the best like sales guru, which granted, I'm not discounting my product because I think it's the best.
Yeah.
However, instead of trying to get like 1% better with that, I was just like, well, none of these guys know how to buy media. They don't know how to operate a true company at 8 figures. And they also don't know how to market. And I was like, man, if I can be the only guy who can really, number one, be able to buy ads profitably and be a great copywriter and marketer. And number two, operate a company properly. If I can do those two things, I'll be the winner in this industry. Because it's like, if you've ever seen Blue Ocean Strategy, where they map it on the map and it's like, here's where all your competitors are. And then like they rate it. And then like, you could kind of see where the white space is. Like, that's where the white space was for me, is like all these folks were not operators. They weren't marketers, but they were pretty good at sales. Like, and I was right up there, if not better than all of them. But like, I didn't try to like come in and being like, well, I'm better at sales than you. I just packaged my offer better. I marketed better. I You know, it's all those things.
The difference is incremental if you're trying to compete on like sales training. It's incremental differences because there's a lot of good stuff out there.
And that's the thing is too, is like if you're like, there's a lot of guys who teach copywriting. Same thing, man. Is like, there's a lot of guys who teach copywriting and it's like, well, my copywriting training is better than your copywriting training. But the person who's going to win in that market is going to be the person who probably packages the best offer together that works on cold traffic. So like, for instance, like, you know, you can just look at my company, but here's what's going to work. It's either helping a copy, like it basically helping a writer get into copywriting or helping an existing writer make more money through the vehicle of copywriting. So it's a new opportunity, or it's going to be placing copywriters, or it's going to be training existing copywriting teams for direct response companies, which might not be a large enough TAM. But like, that's the type of stuff like you people got to think about, because a lot of times it's not like copywriting isn't a great offer. It's like, how do you package together the offer? You know, for me, I went from one-on-one sales training and I was like, okay, this is kind of, I could tell like, this is not going to be a business. You know, the days are going to run out of this. And then I went to sales team training because I was like, okay, this is a little bit more better. And then I went to the recruiting because I knew that was the most like the most powerful one. Yeah. And then once I got there, it's like, how do you get it to work on paid media? Because that's the biggest thing is like, I will say this, this is just good for you to know and good for anybody else to know, is you establish, like the person who establishes the category, creates the category, establishes themselves as the category king. But also the category and the brand is reinforced by advertising. So another thing I would say as well is unless you have a crazy organic, you know, like if you're like a Brooke Castillo level organic, this is different. But for most people, the person who actually creates the category is the first person who could spend at scale on ads profitably, right? So like there's a lot of people who are kind of doing what I was doing before, not really a lot, but a few. But I was the first one to really start spending like seven figures, well, you know, a couple hundred thousand a month, you know, a couple seven figures a year on ads, wildly profitable, right? And so that's how you kind of take the category. And now I just like outspend everybody by a huge margin. Yeah. So I reinforce it. And I think that's really, really key for people to understand is that like the more, like the nice thing about paid media is the brand effect. Totally. Like I literally got stopped in the parking lot leaving jiu-jitsu yesterday. And the dude was like, bro, I see your ads. And it's like, I get that all the time because I just have so many impressions and so much frequency and I'm putting more stuff out there. And so I think that's really, really key because you're just reinforcing your position in the marketplace.
Yeah. Familiarity breeds trust, man.
Yeah.
You know, and trust is so important to any sale, but especially high ticket sales.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one thing I learned from Grant Cardone at a mastermind that he put on recently in Cabo. And he basically just tries to reframe people's mind to think about like, look, right now is when like you're scaling, you're starting, you're trying to create a name for yourself. Don't worry about out earning your competition at the beginning. Just worry about outspending your competition. Like how much money can you possibly spend without going broke to get your name, to get more people to know your name? So like their mission at Cardone U or Cardone Ventures, all of his brands under the 10X brand, their mission is to get 8 billion people to know his name. Like that's his mission. Get 8 billion people to know who I am. Like that's nice. What he says. So it's just like, if enough people know who you are, even people who initially didn't like you, it was really funny, dude. We were in the room, probably like 25 of us in the room. And he asked, he was like, if you didn't like me, the first time you ever saw me, raise your hand. Probably 40%.
Wow. I'm not surprised.
You know, 25K to be in the room for 2 days, 40% of those people were like, yeah, I didn't like you at all. His business partner, Brandon Dawson, who runs Cardone Ventures with him, that's a multi 9-figure education company, was one of the people. He was like, oh, I hated it. He was like, I saw a video of you like throwing cash out of a money machine in front of your jet. And I was like, what a douche. And then like 3 years later, they're in business together. You know what I mean? It was just like, it's not about that. It's about getting people familiar with who you are. And like people will start to trust you over time if you continue to deliver on the things that you say that you can deliver on and the value is there. It becomes about awareness and attention and getting people to be familiar with who you are and who your brand is. Like I did a cold reach out recently to a really big podcast in the space. Obviously, you know our offer. People get booked on podcasts. And so we're looking at this one podcast and I was like, man, I don't know if they're going to take any of our people. This is kind of like their really big show. So I reached out to, I got a contact through somebody in my network, reached out to the booking guy for the show. And I was like, hey man, well, just want to open a line of communication. Let's jump on a call sometime. We have a few clients, might be something of interest. And he emailed me back and was like, hey dude, what's up? Yeah, it's funny. I've actually seen a bunch of your, the Guestio ads recently. And I've been wondering what you guys do. Let's definitely jump on a call and connect next week, you know? And it was like, oh, this random dude who I didn't think was going to go anywhere is now like excited to talk to me just because he's seen my face in a couple of ads.
I know. And I will say like, what's weird is I do think Facebook has more of that effect than any other platform that I've seen. I don't know why, but here's how I know is because when a random stranger will stop me on the street and they will say, I see your ads all the time. I always ask, what ads do they see? And like some of these people aren't even business owners, but they see our B2B ads that are on Facebook. Whereas our like our YouTube and our TikTok ads are mainly B2C. And what's funny is that it's like, that's mainly B2C. We're spending four times more on those ads, but they're seeing the B2B ones more. I think it's a Facebook thing. I just think they have more inventory, cheaper impressions.
Yeah.
And I also think YouTube in particular has a bias against serving impressions more than a couple of times. Whereas Facebook, like
increased frequency. Yeah. As
much So we're shifting a lot of budget back to Facebook. I think Facebook's king again. You know, it's funny.
Interesting.
TikTok ads is really good as well, but I think it's only good for some offers. And obviously YouTube's great too. Like they're all, everything works. It's just, I like that because like, again, right now I'm really trying to establish brand and just get people again to like know the name. And it's funny because even though people might not come directly from the ads, a lot of our referrals are from ads. Like a lot of our word of mouth is from ads. Like it's established through ads. And I think one thing that could help your audience is, and I got this from the 22 Immutable Laws of Branding, is you really want to, like when you, publicity is what establishes you as the category king, but advertising is what maintains it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, I think once we took on, you know, people like Tony Robbins and Dean and Frank Kern and Agora Financial and all these companies, you know, that was like a kind of a publicity thing to where it's like, damn, they're working with them, you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, we're actually in talks with Cardone's company now for a VSL though, not sales. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But you know, there's several people that, you know, were working with Jay Abraham on that type of thing. And so I think that was like a good publicity that kind of established it, you know, and good word of mouth and all that stuff. But then what maintains it is the impressions. And I think when you're advertising, one of the angles we're really trying to use, even though it might not be as effective, is just why are we the number one blank? Mm. You know, why are we the number one blank? And then just telling them why we're the established category king. You know, and if you look at actual traditional brand advertising, that's exactly what it does. The good type, right?
Sure,
it reinforces why that brand is the number one blank, you know?
Right.
And
right.
So I think like for you and maybe for some of your audience, like if it was you, I'd say, why are we, I don't know the name in which you refer to what you do. Yeah. I mean, I know what you do, obviously, I'm a client, but I don't know like if you have like a nice phrase for it, but it's like, why are we the number one blank in the podcast industry? Like why do all the top names go to us when they want to blank? You know, it's just such an easy direct ad to do. And it just the impressions of that, it's like, oh, you know, he's like Cole's the sales team guy. Why? He's worked with blank, 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 blank. You know, it's just little stuff like that. I think I always try to think about how do you engineer like word of mouth behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah. So you're running obviously, multi 8-figure company now. I mean, you guys are on track 30, 40 million, something this year. What is the biggest difference between running an 8-figure business and a 7-figure business?
Yeah. I mean, just to be clear, you know, we've been at about 2 million to 2.5 million. I mean, really like 2.3 to 2.6 ish for like probably 6 or 7 months. So, you know, in all candidness, we're kind of stuck there. And everybody knows how to, I mean, I feel like we know what to do to get past it, but we're, I don't know. It's like, we're still there. So anyways, that's where we're at. Just, you know, I know you said 40 million. I don't want to, I don't want it to be more than it is.
Sure,
so that's where we're at.
Just a measly 30 is all. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Cash. It's not like revenues, right? It's not like contracts close. It's like what hit the bank account. What's the difference? Well, here's what I always say. In the beginning, it's about making yourself rich. So that means figuring out what you're selling, how you're selling it, and getting your clients' results, right? That's stage one. That could be like zero to 100K a month, zero to 200K a month even. And then phase two is making your clients rich. And that doesn't necessarily mean making the money. It could be whatever, right? So typically what happens is you kind of get the thing off the ground. And then once you get a critical mass of customers, you kind of realize like, oh, my product kind of sucks. And like you need to take on more clients than you're comfortable with in that second phase. So you figure out where your product's breaking down. Because most people think that like they need to essentially fix, like they're like, well, I'll fix my product, then I'll scale. But usually they don't know what to fix until they scale.
Yeah.
And certain things they think are going to be an issue are not an issue. It's all based on assumptions. So you actually have to break it to be able to know what systems to actually build. So that's why I call phase two, making your clients rich. Phase three is making your team rich, which this is probably the eight-figure phase, right? This is probably what takes you from about $300,000-$400,000 a month to maybe even lower, like maybe let's say $250,000 a month, all the way past $1 million a month. And this is essentially really giving your recruiting some tremendous people and giving them a like what you know Loonshots would call soft equity, which is a lot of recognition and a percentage. Doesn't necessarily have to be hard equity, but like definitely like a upside and a percentage and stuff. And really coaching them to success because you're not going to be able to do it all yourself. And so this is where business gets way more fun because like it sucks when it's all on you, to be honest. So now when you have really, really great team, really, really great people, they have skin in the game. And your job is to make them successful so that they can make money in their comp structure and build really like, I guess you could say generational wealth. But, you know, just obviously if like I got people making, you know, 40 to 70, 80K a month that work on my team, right? Net, right? Like,
yeah.
And they're gonna make more. So people like that, it's like they're in a place, you know, I don't want to call it generational wealth because I feel like that's like having real estate trust and all that.
Sure,
you know what I'm saying?
It's like a lifestyle. It's a level up of a lifestyle.
Yeah, you want them that ability to like get theirs. You know, is like the only way to explain it. And you want to help them get there. And it's way more fun when you're doing it together too. And so that gets you past $1 million a month and potentially even to $2 million a month. What I would say though after that is the fourth phase is teaching your team that you just did that with to help them do that with their team. You know, it's like an inception. It's like you getting your team to make your team's team rich.
Yeah,
and sure, so this is where those leaders are building departments and executives under themselves. And this is very, very hard because, you know, it's one of those things where you're twice removed from what's going on. So it's kind of like they're, you know, doing their, you got to let them kind of do their own thing and obviously make mistakes. And I think the people I have doing it are doing a phenomenal job. But like, you know, the big thing about coaching leaders is like, number one, even if I wanted to prevent all their mistakes, I couldn't because I, you know, don't have the bandwidth to figure out every little thing that's going on that they're doing. But at the same time, is like, I learned by doing a bunch of mistakes and making big mistakes really fast. So a lot of entrepreneurs, when they're training their leaders, will think that, oh, like they should just know and they're not allowed to make mistakes. But like, well, that's what you did. You made mistakes. So it's giving them permission to make mistakes and helping them derive the right learning lessons from the mistakes. I mean, that's one of the things when I was an employee, I learned that from one of my mentors. And so I think that's a huge thing. And then, you know, past that, I don't really know what's stage five. You know, I think it depends on your TAM and the every business has limits to how much it can grow. So I think it depends on that. And I think eventually, you know, any business becomes a business of many businesses. And so we haven't hit that stage. I mean, we do have two companies. We haven't hit that stage yet, but like, you know, when we do, I'm sure that will help us get to multiple nine figures. And we could go that route now. Like I have people who want me to take equity in their business and help them with their sales team and shit, but I really am passionate about keeping doing what we're currently doing and really optimizing our companies and keeping our mission about producing and empowering world-class salespeople, because that's really what like is more exciting to me anyways.
Well, dude, I got one more question for you. I'll let you go. So this is Build Your Network. We talk a lot about relationship stuff on the show. We didn't talk about them as much with you today because I wanted to focus on a couple of other things. But I've asked this question, I don't know, hundreds of times to all the people who have been on the show. So curious to hear your answer. Who you know or what you know? Which of those two do you think is the more important asset in life?
Ooh, I don't know, man. I mean, that's a good question. You know, it's funny because I think they feed into each other. I think it's more what you know, because sometimes I think it doesn't matter who you know unless you know some good stuff and you can provide some value, right? But like your network's huge as well. But what I'll say is when you can become a person of value through what you know, you're more likely, if you go into a network, to people to come up to you or people to say, oh, I really like, you know, I see your ads all the time. Oh, like you're that, you're this guy. Like I tell you what, when I go to networking events, people always are like, dude, I need to introduce you to X, Y, and Z. They need help with their sales team. Like, I mean, that happens to me all the time. Yeah. And, you know, I think the best networking tool is to become a person of value, you know? And then, I do think obviously you got to be sociable and you got to be able to provide value and try to figure out like what's the value of the other person. But also, dude, at a certain point, I'm probably getting way too heady with this response, but at a certain point, it's like, if you know enough people, that in itself becomes of value.
Valuable.
Right? Yeah. So like when I think about some of the great connectors I know, like I don't know Joe Polish personally, but I've heard like legends of Joe Polish, right? And, you know, apparently everybody's always the most well-connected guy there is. Like when I say, who's Joe Polish? Somebody will be like, most well-connected guy there is. Like he gets that every single time, which is, that's brand, but that's category, you know? And so that in itself becomes valuable when it hits a certain critical mass.
Certainly.
So to answer your question, man, personally for me, it was more of a what you know thing. I think it's what you know kind of gives you leverage to get to know some great people. You know, I can go both ways.
Yeah, no, that's always kind of the, that's why I like the question because it really leans into what that person in particular has experienced. You know, there's no right or wrong. It's just like some people focused on the who first and then the what came. And some people focused on the what first and then the who came. But yeah, I think it largely just depends on like what your experience has been. And the bottom line to me is just like, whichever one you decide to do, like do it. For me, it was always the who you know, because that's how I learned best. So it was like, I always like getting around people who knew way more than me because my what always increased so much more than if I just like read a book or watched a course or something. It's like, if I get around somebody who's doing what I want to do on a much higher level than the one I'm operating on, like my learning is just more, way more exponential at that point. So I always focus on like, who can I find that I can learn from so that I can skip all the other bullshit that happens in between where I am now and where I want to go. But yeah, it's an either or, I think, a lot of times. So, but yeah, dude, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. This is a lot of fun. I'm sure I'll be seeing you either, I don't know, Salt Lake for 100 million or Scottsdale sometime in the near future. So
100%, man. But I will be there in Salt Lake.
Sweet. Sweet. Sounds good, dude. Before we go, where can people connect with you more?
Closers.io is the place. That's the website. Closers.io.
Closers.io, guys, if you are somebody that's looking to learn how to make a little bit of extra money online without starting your own business, doing all the other stuff that we're talking about today, and you just want to learn the one skill set that will take you into the rest of your career, then there's nobody better than doing it right now than Cole Gordon's team over at Closers.io. And if you're a business and you need a sales team, then also that's the program that I'm in. Their coaches, their training is second to none. So go check out everything they're doing over there, closers.io. Cole, thanks for coming on the show, man. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome, brother. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode. That's it for today. As you all know, this show is completely free. Our only ask is that if you found anything valuable in this episode or in any of the episodes that you've listened to, then share it with somebody else and leave us a quick rating review in whatever platform you're listening to right now. It would be super, super helpful for us. So that's it for today, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Catch you next time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.